Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Sukkah Daf Lamed Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur 9 lines from the top of Daf Lamed Gimel. The Gemara opens up with a quote from the Mishnah, Niktam Roshoi. We have been using since the beginning of the Masichta the book of illustrations, the Pirush Chai. So here we refer to illustration 502 on page 101 of the Pirush Chai. On the side of the Gemara, we have written under our Nosei, our topic heading, Niktam Roshoi, the top of the Hadas branch was nipped off, the ulsa boi tamora, and a berry developed. And this leads us into a discussion concerning dichui eitzel mitzvos. A word about dichui. Dichui means something that's cast away, that's pushed aside. The concept of dichui, of something that's rendered unfit, is prominent or has as its source the realm of sacrifices. In other words, if someone, let us say, dedicated a sacrifice, and after it was dedicated, it became unfit for whatever reason, can it become fit again? The term that's used to describe that situation is nireh v'nidcheh. It was fit and then became unfit. That is something that certainly has relevance to sacrifices. The question is, does that issue of dichui, of something being unfit and then becoming fit, have relevance in the realm of mitzvos? We continue now in the Gemara, Toni Ulo Bar Chinana, and we should look at illustration 523, which essentially is a magnification of what we saw in 522, but 523 enables us to lead into the next illustration, 524. This is on page 105 in the Pirush Chai. So, Niktam Rosho, the top of the myrtle branch of the Hadas, was chopped off. The Ulsa Boi Tamora, and some type of growth developed where the cut was. Tomorrow, type of berry or something else. The illustration has something else there, but some type of growth set in after the top was lopped off. Of course, Niktam Rosho, we learned if the Hadas had its top lopped off, that would render it unfit. But now, it's not exactly with this tomorrow having grown in its place, it's not cut off anymore. Something has grown there. Boy, Rabbi Yirmiya, Niktam Roshoi Me'erev Yom Tov. Let's say you had, before Sukkot set in, a myrtle branch whose top was chopped off. Ve'olsa boi Tamora B'Yom Tov. And on Sukkot, the Tamora grew in. Mahu, what is the din? We should point out that the status of the Hadas of having mitzvah significance is so only on Yom Tov itself. So whatever happened before Yom Tov isn't of great importance, other than the fact that here, upon the entrance to Yom Tov, it was chopped off at the top. In the course of Yom Tov, the Tamora grew in. So, do we say, Yesh dichui eitzel mitzvois oi loi? This concept of dichui, which we said in our introduction, applies to sacrifices, and an animal that is found to be unfit cannot become fit again as a sacrifice. Does this analogy or does this concept apply to mitzvos, as is the case here, where the mitzvah of the Hadas branch in its mitzvah capacity, upon the onset of Yom Tov, it was unfit. Does that label it as permanently unfit, or only by the sanctity of sacrifices do we say it remains unfit, as opposed to the realm of mitzvos, it can become fit with the growth of the berry, making it such that it's no longer a chopped off top? That is the basic question. However, before answering the question, the Gemara asks, if you're why don't you resolve this question from the topic and the discussion that we find by Kisui Hadam? You might be asking, what's Kisui Hadam? Literally, the covering of the blood. Now, the Torah requires that when one slaughters for personal eating an undomesticated kosher animal, for example, a deer, they're called chayos, or anything in the realm of the bird kingdom, chickens, doves, all other kinds of kosher birds that you slaughter. Upon slaughtering that, the blood must be covered. In fact, you have to place a layer of dirt or sand down, and upon that you slaughter these creatures, the chayos or oifos, and then cover it as well with a layer of dirt above. That's Kisui Hadam. So in Kisui Hadam has to do with the realm of mitzvos, our realm. And there's a discussion concerning Kisui Hadam, and from that discussion we should have been able to settle Rav Yirmiyah's question. So in effect, we have, you can see a long question marking. We're asking a question. Why does Rav Yirmiyah ask his question when he could have answered it from that which has been said by Kisui Hadam? So what the Gemara will have to eventually answer is, why does Rav Yirmiyah ask his question? That will be what we have to see in the answer. So it's a kind of a complicated structure, because Rav Yirmiyah opens up with his own question, but the Gemara then upon that asks a question. Why are you, Rav Yirmiyah, asking this question when you could have settled the topic, your question from the issue of Kisui Hadam? The Gemara will then answer why Rav Yirmiyah did not resolve his issue from the case of Kisui Hadam. So let us now see this in the Gemara. V'tifsho lei mehal desnan. Why doesn't Rav Yirmiyah resolve his question from that which is taught regarding Kisui Hadam? And it says, Kisohu, a man covered the blood, as we described before, finis gale, and the cover, the layer of dirt, blew off. It got exposed. The blood got exposed. Poter milchasas. There's no need to further cover the blood. In other words, the initial covering that this man did, that's it. He finished the mitzvah, and he doesn't have to ensure that the blood remains permanently covered. There's another scenario. Kisoha ruach chayav lechasas. If the blood was covered by wind, in other words, a person slaughtered the bird or the deer over some dirt, and before he had a chance to cover it with an upper layer of dirt, the wind covered it. The wind blew the dirt, blew dirt over the blood. So it says in this source, Chayav Lechasos, he is duty bound to cover it, but that's not clear. The Omar Rabo Bar Chana, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Loishanu, this teaching that he is chayav to cover it is limited. Elo shechozer v'nizgale. It's only if it became exposed after the wind covered it, another wind blew and it became exposed. Avalo chozer v'nizgale poter milachasos. If, however, it remained covered, albeit it was covered by the wind, you don't have to do anything. You're exempt from doing anything. V'havinon bo, and we ask, ki chozar v'nizgale, in the event that after the wind covered it, it became exposed, amai chayav l'chasos, why is there a requirement of covering it again? Hoyol v'idchi idchi. Is it not so that once the wind covered it, you said that if the wind covered it, you don't have to do anything more? So doesn't that show that the initial covering finished the job? So why is it that once it was covered by the wind, why are you saying that if it becomes exposed, you do have to cover it? Has the need for covering not already been taken care of? And the reason for asking us, and we're being a little repetitious, but the reason we're saying this is because you just taught us, Rav Yochanan told us, that as long as it remained covered, even though it was covered by the wind, you don't have to do anything. So the mitzvah or the requirement is fulfilled. So why is it that if it becomes exposed, you have to recover it? The Omer Rav Papa, and Rav Papa commenting on this, says, Zois Oimeres, from the fact that you still have to, that you have to cover it again, Ein Dichui Eitzel Mitzvos. And we've dashed underlined this because this is the main point of bringing this question in. We see from here that the concept of dichui, of once something is pushed away, doesn't render it permanently pushed away. What do we mean by that? Once it was covered by the wind, we don't say that's the end of the mitzvah, it's finished, it's pushed away from the realm of mitzvah fulfillment. We don't say that. But rather, even if it was covered initially by the wind, if it becomes exposed, this mitzvah is still in the ball game, and you have to cover it now. So what do we see? Let's try to be concise and to the point. Ein dichui eitzel mitzvahs. It's very clear. That being the case, why does Rav Yirmiyah ask about the chopped off myrtle branch, the chopped off hadas, where upon entrance to Yontif, the branch was chopped off at the top, so that you would say what's dichui, and then the tamora grew, as we saw in illustration 524, making it no longer chopped off. So ein dichui eitzel mitzvahs, the myrtle branch is good, it's kosher, because the concept of dichui doesn't apply to mitzvahs. Just to be a little repetitive, true, it was in a state of dichui when Yom Tov began, but that doesn't bother us with regard to mitzvahs, as we see here by the case of the Kisui Hadam. So once again, why does Rav Yirmiyah even ask his question? The Gemara answers. Rav Yirmiyah could not with assuredness answer his question based on Rav Papa's principle. Then before we read the Gemara, let us explain. Rav Papa's principle of Ein Dichui Eitzel Mitzvahs figured in the context of Kisui Hadam, and what was the result? The result of saying Ein Dichui Eitzel Mitzvahs was actually imposing a chumrah is a stringency upon us, meaning you still have to recover the blood. That's asking of us to do something more. True, it was once covered by the wind, got exposed. Now you have to do something. That's an additional requirement, a chumrah. Now, applying the concept of Ein Dichui Eitzel Mitzvahs to the case that Rav Yirmiyah was talking about, what was the result? The result was that I can now use this branch. That's a leniency. Instead of saying the branch is pusel, because it was, as when Yom Tov came in, it was chopped off, we're allowing you to use it because the tamara grew on. That is a leniency. So what Rav Yirmiyah was not sure of is as follows. Do we say Ein dichui eitzel mitzvahs, like Rav Papa said, and we say that across the boards, regardless of whether it's a chumrah or a kula, regardless of whether it results in a stringency or a leniency, or it could be that Rav Papa's din of Ein dichui eitzel mitzvahs is stated only when the result is a stringency. But if the result is a leniency, so then we're not going to apply the principle of Ein dichui eitzel mitzvahs. And that's the point that Rav Yirmiyah was not clear on. So now let's read this in the words. In response to the question of why did Rav Yirmiyah ask his question in light of the fact that we have the discussion of Kisui Adam and Rav Papa's conclusion, the Gemara answers why Rav Yirmiyah asked this question. The Rav Papa Gufo Miboyale, the principle that Rav Papa taught, is itself something that was not clear to Rav Yirmiyah in how to apply it. Mifshat, now there are two sides of this analysis. Mifshat pshitole, do we say that it's poshit to the Tana that was mechayev kisui hadam, that was mechayev me to cover the blood after the wind covering became exposed? Is it poshit to the Tana, the ein dichui eitzel mitzvahs lo yishno lekula v'lo yishno lechumra? We say ein dichui eitzel mitzvahs, whether the result is a result of leniency, which would be the case by the hadas, or whether the result is a stringency, as is the case of the kisui adam, or idilma, or sfuke mesafkale. The Tana was actually in doubt about how to apply the idea of ein dichui eitzel mitzvahs lechumra amrina, and as a result, we'll say ein dichui if the result is expecting more of me, i.e. a stringency, like is the case by the kisui adam, where we're mechayev you to cover the blood. Lekula lo amrinon. But if the result is a leniency, so we won't say ein dichui eitzel mitzvahs, like is the case to machshir the hadas. Teku. So this remains unresolved. Hence, Rav Yirmiyah asked his question, and as far as the dichui eitzel mitzvahs analysis is concerned, we can't answer it in the affirmative. Lema ketanoi. Here the Gemara raises a question. Shall we say that the issue of yesh dichui ein dichui eitzel mitzvahs is a machloikes tanoim? And we've used a topic heading and called it hemshech, a continuation. And we've written Nisayon lahamid hanoisei the dichui eitzel mitzvahs kemachloikes tanoim, Rabbi Elazar ben Tzedek and the Chachamim. This is an attempt on the Gemara, and that's why we have a long question marking here. Shall we say that this issue is in fact a machloikes tanoim, a Tanaic controversy? As we go on in the Gemara, you'll notice triangles that appear, and it highlights the expression komifligi, and these are hesberim lemachloikis hatanoim deliel. In other words, we're going to be trying to offer an explanation for the machloikis. Some of the Gemara has several stages. The first stage is, of course, as we said, to present the issue of dichui eitzel mitzvahs as a machloikis tanoim. So the Gemara asks, Lemo katanoi, shall we say whether there is or is not dichui b'mitzvahs is a machlokes tanoim? And it says in the source, Avar v'likton posel divrei Rabbi Elazar ben Tzedek. This is a reference to the myrtle branch that has a majority of berries versus leaves on it. And we were taught that if you want to be able to use it, so before Yom Tov, make sure to remove the berries. On Yom Tov, however, the Mishnah taught us that you're not allowed to remove the berries. Let us say he did. Again, on Yom Tov. Yom Tov set in, and the branch had too many berries, so it was posel when Yontov set in, and now he was he violated the law and he picked off the berries on Yontov. So the Tanakama, Reb Elozer Reb Tzadik says, Ovar v'likton posel, you haven't accomplished anything, you didn't make it kosher. The Chachomim machshirin. The Chachomim say it's good, what you did is good. In other words, you shouldn't have done it, but if you did, if you removed the berries, the branch is kosher. Savruha, there is an assumption, Tekuli Alma, Lulav, Ein, Tzorech, Eged, that everyone here is in agreement that the Lulav does not need to be bound together with the other species. The Im Timsil Matzorch Eged, and even if you say that it does need to be bound together with the Hadassim and Aravos, nevertheless, Lo Yalfinon Lulav Misuka Dichsiv Bo Ta'aseh V'lo Min Ha'osui. By Sukkah, it says Chaga Sukkah is Ta'aseh L'chol Shivas Yomim, and we learn from that when you make a Sukkah, you're supposed to make it specifically, you're supposed to place the Schach on it in a state of kashrus. And there are many examples of what would not be a state of kashrus. So the concept of making it in a state of acceptability, this is something that applies to sukkah. But we're making the assumption right now that the making of the lulav, and that would be if you say that the lulav needs to be tighter with the other varieties, that this concept of asiyah, of ta'asev, making, in this case, the lulav, in a state of kashrus, does not apply. So we're going to make this assumption right now, that either the lulav doesn't need to be bound together, and even if it does, the concept of asiyah, of making it in a state of kashrus, doesn't apply. So now let's bring this into, let's tie this down, let's get this into the topic of the branch with the berries. My lav behalkom iflugi, the understanding of the machlokes tanoim is as follows. The man de posil, Reb Elozer Reb Tzadik, who said that if you did remove the berries on Yom Tov, you're not going to fulfill the mitzvah, he holds Amrinon yesh dichoy etzel mitzvahs, that the concept of dichoy, of being pushed away, being rendered unfit, applies to mitzvahs as well as to korbonos, as well as, just like by korbonos we say dichoy, so too by mitzvahs. And therefore, since at the onset of Yom Tov the myrtle branch was unfit, that's it, you can't make it kosher. Uman de machshir, the chachomim that say that you can, that it becomes kosher, sovar lo amrinon, that we don't apply the concept of yesh dichoy etzel mitzvahs. Might apply by sacrifices, but it's not going to apply by mitzvahs. Therefore, even though at the onset of Yom Tov the hadas branch was not kosher, by removing the berries you can make it kosher, because we don't say yesh dichoy etzel mitzvahs. So at this point we're at the end of our question. So it would seem that the concept of yesh dichoy etz mitzvahs is a machloikes tanoim. The Gemara says, loy, this is not so. Dekule alma, everyone will agree, loy amrinan, yesh dichoy etz mitzvahs. Everyone agrees that the concept of dichoy does not apply to mitzvahs. Well, if that's true, then why does Reb Elozer Reb Tzadik render the myrtle branch unfit? The hocha, the melaf lulav misuka komifliki. The machlokes tanoim concerns learning lulav from sukkah. What does that mean for us? Well, just like by sukkah, there's a concept of asiyah, of making it, building the sukkah and putting schach on top. So too, by lulav, there's a concept of making, and that would be the binding together of the different varieties into one unit, the lulav together with the hadas maros. That's called eged. Now, if you say that I'm going to learn lulav from sukkah, I'm going to be saying then, just like by sukkah, when you make it, it has to be made initially in a kosher state, so too by the lulav. And therefore, if you had the, we should point out that the binding together of the lulav has to be done erev Yom Tov. So it was made, but it was made with an unfit branch. You pulled off the berries only on Yom Tov in our case. So it was made in an unkosher state. If you say, I'm going to learn the approach to lulav from sukkah, so then the scenario we just described of binding together erev Yom Tov, a branch with too many, a branch of the hadas with too many berries on it, and then on Yom Tov removing the berries, you will not make it acceptable, because that was called ta'aseh v'lo min ha'osui. You're supposed to make it initially in a kosher fashion, and not make it initially unkosher, and then after it's been made, to remove the problem. Now let's see this in the words. We just said v'hocha b'melaf lulav misukah kol miflugi. More sovar, Rabbi Elazar ben Tzedek holds, he was the one that passed, that rendered unfit, yalfinon lulav misukah, that I learned the rules of lulav from the rules of sukkah, through comparison. And just like by the sukkah, there's a concept of making it in initially kosher, so too by the lulav. It has to be made initially with a proper hadas branch bound in. And therefore, if it's made initially, if it's tied together initially with a hadas branch that has too many berries on it, so it remains unfit. Umor sovar, the chachomim, hold, lo yalfinon lulav misukah. We don't learn and apply the same rules that we have by sukkah to the lulav, so that even though the sukkah must be made in a state of kashrus, when it comes to the lulav, even if it's made, it's bound together with all the varieties, it's tied together in an unkosher state, that doesn't bother us. By removing the berries, you can make it kosher. V'iboyesema, another approach, e sviralon lulav tzorech eged, if there was acceptance of lulav requiring being tied together, meaning the tying together of the lulav with the hadasim and arovas, the kuliyamu yalfinu lulav misukah, then everyone would agree that I learn the laws of lulav from sukkah, and it would be puzzle in our case, because you didn't tie it together when it was kosher. However, v'hocha b'lulav tzarech eged komiflaki, the machlokis, Rabbi Elazar ben Tzedek and the Chachamim, is that very point. Does the lulav need to be bound together with the hadasim and the arovas? Is there an asiyah by the lulav? That's their point of controversy. And therefore, according to this analysis, Rabbi Elazar ben Tzedek would take the stance that lulav tzorech eged, it needs to be bound together, and hence I would learn from sukkah that it has to be bound together initially in a kosher state, not with a branch of too many berries on it. The Rabbanan, they say that there's no making to begin with, because the lulav ain't tzorech eged, it doesn't have to be bound together. So the whole concept of asiyo doesn't apply in the first place. And therefore, by removing the berries later on Yom Tov, it's okay. Ubepluto dehani tanoi. And the issue of lulav tzorech eged is a machlokes tanoim that we will see. Tisanyo. Lulav, bein ogud, bein she'enu ogud kosher. As far as the lulav is concerned, whether it's tied together with hadasim and harovas or not, it's okay. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ogud kosher, she'enu ogud posel. Rabbi Yehuda says it must be bound together, and if it's not, it's unfit. My time with Rabbi Yehuda, what is the reason for Rabbi Yehuda's insistence on the lulav being bound together with the hadasim and harovas? Answer, yolif lekicha lekicha. He has a gezera shava, a word comparison, me agudas ezoiv, from the binding together of the ezov. Ksiv hocha ulekachtem lochem b'yom harishon. It says here in the case of the lulav, the word lekachtem is used. Ulksiv hosam in the case of Pesach Mitzrayim. This is the korban Pesach that was slaughtered while the Jews were still in Egypt, the kind of eve of their exodus, and the Torah mentions the following: ulekachtem agudas ezov, and a cluster of ezov. Ezov is a type of plant. So let's say ezov branches were to be tied together, and it was used there for the sprinkling of the blood of the Korban Pesach, the application of the Korban Pesach blood on their doorposts. Ma lahalon aguda, there, in the case of Pesach Mitzrayim, you see the word lekachtem together with aguda. Aguda means something bound together. So afkan, so too by lulav, aguda. The word lekachtem is to be understood as with a binding. Vrabonon, less lehu lekicha lekicha. The Rabbanon who disagree with Rabbi Yehuda, they don't have a tradition of that word comparison. So therefore, in the case of the lulav, all the Torah is saying, take a lulav. That means pick up a lulav, and you'll pick up hadasim and arovas, and they don't have to be tied together. Mantana leha detanu Rabbanon. Who would the author of the following source be? By the way, illustration 525 is found on page 105. There he has this as caption, Lulav Mitzvah Liogdo, a lead into this source. So the source says, as far as the Lulav concerned, it's a mitzvah. There is a mitzvah fulfillment in binding it together. V'im lo ogdo, kosher. And if you didn't tie the different varieties together, it's still kosher. Money, who would author this? E Rabbi Yehuda, if it were in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda that the eged is ma'akev, that it's then here it was a fantastic pun, and that is that the binding is binding. So ki lo ugdoi amai kosher. Why then would the source, if it were authored by Rabbi Yehuda, why would it say that if you didn't bind it, that it's acceptable? He holds, Rabbi Yehuda holds, that the binding is binding. E Rabbonon, my mitzvah covet. According to the Rabbonon, what's the mitzvah fulfillment? The Rabbonon held that there's no need to bind it to begin with. The Gemara answers, Le'olam Rabbonon, the source we just read is according to the Rabbonon, U'mitzvah mishum zeh keli v'andeyu. And the use of the term mitzvah, of mitzvah fulfillment, is a fulfillment of a beautification of the mitzvah, and it's considered a greater fulfillment or beautifying of it when the branches are all bound together to form one unit. That's learned from the pasuk of Zeh Keli V'Anvehu, and I will glorify him. Oy Shehoyu Anovov Merubin. Illustration 504 shows us what this might look like, and that you can see that back on page 101 in the Pirush Chai. As you can see, we have some markings, and on the side we have under our Nosei Mivne heading, we featured a diamond, and you'll see Roman numerals 1 and 2. They represent Shnei L'Shoinois B'Rav Chisda, two versions of Rav Chisda, Be'anovov Merubin Me'olov. In this topic of a myrtle branch, a hadas branch with more berries than leaves. So now the Gemara. Omar Rav Chisda. Dovar Zeh Rabbeinu Hagodol Omroi. the following was said by our great teacher. That's a reference to Rav. V'amokom yeh ba'ozro, and the Almighty should be to his assistance. An expression called rabbinic license. Loishonu elo b'mokom echad. The psul of Anova v'merubin is only if they are in one spot. Illustration 526. Avol b'shnayim loishloisho mekoymois kosher. Illustration 527 would show you that there are more berries than leaves, but it's in order to get to that, you have to add up several places. Omar Rava. Rava objects. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Shnayim u'shloisha mekoymois have a menumar u'pasol. If it is as appears in illustration 527, it's menumar. Menumar means spotted. On the top, in Rashi, on the top, menumar u'pasol, delav hoder hu, it's not pleasant, it's not nice looking. Sharei anovim shoros ve'olam yurukin, the berries are black and the leaves are green, giving us the impression of it being a spotted type branch. Elo, I itmar hochi itmar. If anything was said by Rav Chisda, so it would be the following. In other words, not the distinction that he just made between one spot being kosher, being unkosher, and several spots being kosher. That doesn't make sense. As Rava just pointed out, if it would be in several spots, that might even be worse. It's then the problem then would be one of being menumar, spotted. So if Rav Chisda said anything, it's as follows. Oh, shehoyu anov of merubin me'ol of pasul. That's a quote from the Mishnah. If the myrtle branch had more berries than leaves, it's unfit. Omer Rav Chisda, davar zeh rabbeinu hagadol omro, v'amokom yeh be'ozro. The following was said by Rav, and the Almighty should be in his assistance. Lo yishanu. This teaching that it's pasul, that it's unfit, is qualified. Elo anovov shoros. It's only if the berries are black. Avol anovov yerukin, yerukos. If the berries were green, similar to the color of the leaves, mine dahadas hu v'kosher. It's considered a variation or another type of hadas. In other words, that it doesn't appear spotted. As Rashi says, mine dahadas dinu, the berries are a type of hadas, shemarei and shoveloi v'eino nira minumar. And it doesn't appear spotted, and it's therefore okay. Omar of Papa, adumos kishoros damyon. If the berries are red, then they have the din of black. And where do we see red compared to black? We can add, by the way, Rashi, adumos kishoros damyon, Rashi on the fourth line from the top, delav min yoroku. Red is not considered in the family of yorok, of green. Vezehu shachri rusan. The redness is actually a type of blackening. Yovshu me'at yoiser yu shorim. If when they dry out even more, you'll see they turn black. And this concept, or let's say relationship between red and black, we find in another area of halacha. The Omar of Hanina, hai dam shochor, blood that appears as black. And this teaching has relevance to the realm of Nida, the menstruant woman, who when there is a blood release, she becomes tome. Let's say that the fluid coming forth from her appears black. So Rav Hanina says, the black blood is really red. Odoim hu, elo shaloka. It's loka means it's afflicted. In other words, it's problematic. It's a sickly type of blood, but nevertheless, it's blood and it's associated with redness. So the black is associated with redness. It's a two-way street, and redness is associated with black, as is the case in the red berries. And that, therefore, Rav Papa came to his conclusion that adumos kishoros. Im mi'aton kosher. we said that if he reduced the berries, then the plant, the branch is kosher. Dimatinu emas. So when did he reduce the berries? When did he pull them off? On the side of the Gemara, you see we have a topic heading, the nosei, dihui meikora, versus nir'e v'nircha. Dihui meikora is a situation where something is at its initial appearance is unfit, and later it can be, does it become fit? And nir'e v'nircha is a case where at the initial appearance, and we mentioned before that the issue of the myrtle branch being considered something that's mitzvah related has relevance only with regard to its state when Yom Tov begins. So to make it more practical, the Dichui Meikor would be a case where at the beginning of Yom Tov it wasn't fit. We saw this before in the Gemara, where it was chopped off when Yom Tov set in, and then the Tamora grew on the top. There's another case of Nireh V'Nidche, where at the onset of Yom Tov, it really was kosher, and then in the interim, it became unfit. Can it become fit again? So right now, we have a myrtle branch, a Hadas branch, that has more berries than leaves, and the Mishnah says, if you reduced the berries, if you pulled them off, the branch is kosher. Now, we're asking, when did this reduction take place? Dimatinu emas. And the double underline here features the called stages in figuring out when the reduction took place. Ilemo mekame d'lagde pshita. If he pulled off the berries before he tied the branches together, the hadasim together with the lulav and arova, so the din of the Mishnah would be obvious that is kosher. Namely, before you put them together, you had a myrtle branch that was all leaves, no berries. So you were binding together a kosher branch. Elo lebosar de la agde. So rather, if the Mishnah is telling me something that's not obvious, so it must be this case. He bound it in with too many berries. After it was bound together with the other, with the lulav and the arovis, he then pulled off the berries. Well, dihui meikarahu. This would be a case of at the outset, meaning at the time that you bound it together, it was unfit. Dihui, unfit, meikar, at the outset. And then what does the Mishnah say? It says, if you then, after it was bound together, you pulled off the berries, it's kosher. So tifshot mina, let us conclude from here, dihui meikara lo havi dihui, that when something is unfit at the beginning, that doesn't mean it's permanently unfit, it's not considered dihui, it's not considered pushed away. So shall we conclude that from over here? The oilam, the Gemara says, no. I will tell you, bosar de akde, v'kosovar, Eged Hazmona Bi'almahu. I will tell you that, in fact, the pulling off of the berries was after it was already bound in. However, the whole binding is of no real consequence. The Gemara's term here is Eged Hazmona Bi'almahu, V'Hazmona Bi'almo Lav Klum Hu. In other words, shame lulav, kvius, the establishment of the lulav being a lulav of a mitzvah is not accomplished by its being bound together. If we look in the Rashi, a few lines down from here, he says, "Hachi garsinin le'olam boser de'agde v'kosover eged." Hazmona bi'almahu, ein agudosoi, the binding together of the hadasim, the hadas with the too many berries on it, its binding together with the lulav and arova is ein agudosu kriyas shem lios chal olav shem lulav posel lidchois. it's not called a lulav puzzle. It's not called an unfit lulav simply by virtue of the fact that you tied them together. Hilchoch afilu dichui meikora ein kan. Therefore, it's not considered dichui from the outset. In other words, the idea of it becoming rendered unfit is not determined by it's being tied together. Now, we mentioned earlier, and we should have emphasized again, the binding together takes place on Erev Yom Tov. But the Havamina was, the thought was, that the binding together establishes the Lulav and its other varieties as an element of mitzvah. A mitzvah unit. And here the Gemara is saying, no, since we're talking Erev Yom Tov, and the binding is of no real relevance or consequence, therefore, at the point that you tied it together with the too many berries on it, doesn't render it dihui meikara. So Rashi continues and says, Hilkach afilu dihui meikara ein kan ad shi kadesh elav hayom veldenu bepsulo. The only time that dihui would become an issue is if it was with too many berries at the onset of Yom Tov. Kidesh HaYolov HaYom is the beginning of the holiday, and it's still with too many berries. The Kevin the Mota Zman Mitzvah, V'lo Chozi Lei, since the mitzvah time, namely Yom Tov, has arrived, and it wasn't fit because of the too many berries, Mikri Dichui. That would be considered a situation of Dichui. Avo Mekami Hochi Lav Dichui, but prior to that, the issue of Dichui doesn't even begin. V'ein mematin b'yom tov. The Mishnah taught us that you don't remove the black berries that are the rove. You don't memayit them. You don't remove them on Yom Tov. Ha'ovar v'likton mai. If, however, you violated Yom Tov and did pull off the berries, what is the din? Kosher. The myrtle branch, the hadas, will be acceptable. The Ashur Emas, when did they turn black? Ilemo the Ashur Me Esmoil, if you say that they were black before Yom Tov began, and therefore, as Yom Tov set in, it set in with a Posel Hadas branch. Well, Dihui Meikorahu. That would be an example of something unfit at the outset. And what did we just say? We said if you were Ovar V'lokton, it would be kosher. So, Tifshot Minah, so let us conclude from this. Dichui Meikora Delo Havi Dichui. That if something is unfit at the outset, it doesn't mean it remains permanently unfit. Now, why didn't we use this information from the Mishnah and the Diuk we just made? Why don't we use this to conclude that Dichui Meikora is not Dichui? Elolav, rather it must be the Ashur B'Yom Tov, that they turn black on Yom Tov itself. Namely, when Yom Tov set in, the berries were green, hence they didn't present a problem. So it was near eh. When Yom Tov set in, they were near means they were fit, qualified. And then, as the hours went by, they turned black. That's the Ashur B'Yom Tov. So then, and what did we say? We said a moment before that if Ofar V'Likton Kosher, so then, Nireh v'nitchehu, this would be an illustration of something that was fit, and then in the interim became unfit. And then we said that if you removed them, the black berries, on Yom Tov, you weren't supposed to, but if you did, it's kosher. So Shamis Minah, should we conclude from this? Nireh v'nitche choyze v'nireh? This, by the way, is a more far-reaching conclusion than Dichui Meikora. There is a feeling means a halachic reality, that something that was that was qualified and became disqualified is a more difficult situation to repair. But if you're telling me that they turn black on Yom Tov proper, and Ovar V'Likton is kosher, then we would be able to conclude that Nira V'Nidcho Z'V'Nira, and as we said, that's even a more far-reaching conclusion than Dichui Mei Kora. So the Gemara says, should we conclude this, that Nira V'Nidcho Choza V'Nira? Loi. Gemara says, no, I'm not going to conclude that far. Li Oilom, but rather the Ashur Meikora. That at the onset of Yom Tov, they were already black. Dichui Meikora Dolavi, Dichui Tifshot Mino. And therefore, the concept of Dichui Meikora, that's something that was unfit at the outset, does not render it permanently unfit. That, Tifshot Mino, let us conclude that. That we can conclude from our Mishnah. The Mishnah with the diuk that we made, that Ha'avar V'Likdon is kosher. Avol Nira V'Nidcha Choyze V'Nira Lo Tifshot. But to conclude that far, when we say that was more far-reaching, that far we're not going to conclude from our Mishnah. In other words, by setting up the black berries as having been black at the onset of Yom Tov, so with that, and then we said Ha'ovar V'Likton Kosher, we can use that information to conclude Dichui Meikora V'Lo Havei Dichui. And that's it. But to suggest that our Mishnah is describing a case of the berries having turned black on Yom Tov, which would have led us to conclude Nira V'Nidcha Choze V'Nira, that we're not going to say. We continue with the Gemara and a new topic heading. On the side, we've written under the Nosei, Ein Mimatin, the Anov of Yom Tov, and that's called Mesakein Mona. That's, you're making a vessel, in this case, a mitzvah vessel. You're making it into a kosher branch. The Gemara later will deal with another topic, Huter Ogdo Yom Tov, the binding that you bound the different branches, the lulav, hadas, and ravas, which you bound together every Yom Tov, it became undone, the tie became undone on Yom Tov. What do I do now? Do I tie them together? Do I make a bow? This will be touched on later. So now the Gemara, Ton Rabbonon, Ein Mematin B'Yom Tov, one is not to reduce the berries on Yom Tov, Mishum Rabbi Elozer B'Rabbi Shimon Omru Mematin. In the name of Rabbi Elozer Shimon, it was said, you can remove the berries on Yom Tov. Again, we're talking about a Hadas branch that has more berries than leaves, and as such, it's unkosher. The question now is, how can Rabbi Elozer Shimon say that you can reduce them? V'ha'kom esakin mona b'Yom Tov? Are you not repairing or creating a vessel on Yom Tov? And that's strictly forbidden. You can't make vessels. And here we're talking about a mitzvah vessel, the Hadas branch, so that it becomes useful. So making vessels on Yom Tov is strictly forbidden. How can Rebbe Elozer Shimon allow this? Om Ravashi says, Kegon Shelokton L'Achilo, he had his intention, the pulling off the berries for eating the berries. He wasn't thinking about the repairing of the branch for his lulav purposes. For Rebbe Elozer Shimon, Sover Lo Kavua, and Rebbe Elozer Shimon holds like his father, Rebbe Shimon, the Omar Dover She'ein Miskavein Mutter, that an action that's done on Shabbos, there, where you didn't have in mind the prohibited result, that situation is allowed. And the case here is he was pulling off berries without kavona, without intention of making it into a kosher branch. He was picking off the berries in order to eat the berries. The Gemara asks, V'ho Abaye v'Rova, the Amri Travaihu, both Abaye and Rova say, Moide Reb Shimon, b'psik reishe v'lo yomus. Reb Shimon, who in fact is lenient with regard to Dovar She'ein Miskavein, where you did an action but had no intention for the forbidden outcome, Reb Shimon is lenient and says, it's okay. Nevertheless, Reb Shimon in the case of Psik Reshe. Now, literally, Psik Reshe is someone who takes off the head of an animal. Let's say he takes off a chicken head in order to give it to his child as a toy. Is that allowed to be done on Shabbos? Can you take off a chicken's head from we're talking, of course, a live chicken, and remove its head so that you can give something to your child to play with? Your intention is not for killing the chicken, and therefore you don't have a forbidden intention in mind. Your intention is simply to provide a toy for your child. Nevertheless, Reb Shimon is moda, he concedes that when the result is inevitable, your intention is of no interest. And what that means in practical terms, since the loss of life is of a chicken, is inevitable when you remove its head, so that it's considered as if you had that intention. You didn't actually have that intention, but since the outcome is inevitable, the forbidden outcome, the netilas neshama, the loss of life is inevitable, and you're not allowed to take life on Shabbos. Therefore, even if you didn't have kavonot, even if it was eno miskaving, but it was an inevitable conclusion or an inevitable result, you can't do it. And therefore, the removal of berries, even if you had the intention of eating the berries, but nevertheless, the koshering, the making kosher of this branch is an inevitable result, it won't be allowed. So how can Reb Elazar ben Shimon say you're allowed to reduce the berries on Yom Tov? The Gemara answers, Hocha b'mayaskinon, the case that Reb Elazar ben Shimon was dealing with, the is le hoishana achriti, the person in question, the person that was reducing the berries from his myrtle branch, was a person that he already had a kosher hoshana. He had the kosher lulav with the arovas and the hadas, and everything was already in place. And he had another branch and an extra branch. So since he didn't need this, the result of Misaki Mona didn't apply to this person. He didn't need it as a mitzvah vessel. He already had his mitzvah vessel prepared. So his reducing of the berries for eating purposes was quite all right. There was no forbidden result in his case. Rashi explains on the third line under the Gemara text, Lo tzricha, isle hoshana achriti, v'lo tzorach lahai. He doesn't need this branch. He doesn't need this branch for his mitzvah purposes. Hilkoch ein kan tikun kli. There is no repairing of the vessel. There is no creation of a mitzvah vessel here. Deloi tzricha le lachshur. He doesn't need to make it kosher. He is pulling off berries for the sole purpose of eating the berries, and as far as using it for as a mitzvah vessel is of no consequence to him, because he's already got his minim, he's got his lulav and hadassim ros already prepared. V'lo domi hashta lipsik reshe. At this point, since he's got another branch, it's not like the case of the head removal. D'hosam ikon netilas neshama mimonavshach. In that case, whatever the circumstances are, there is loss of life. There's an objective loss of life. V'hocha, but in our case of the berries, where he has an additional branch, he already has his lulav prepared with his hadasim. Lecho tikun kli. There is no creation of a mitzvah vessel. Aval ilo havi achriti. If, however, he needed this particular branch, he had no other hadasim ready. Mashvi le mona. The picking off of the berries would in effect be making it into a vessel. Totzorch lochi. He needs it. Even if he didn't have intention for making it kosher at that point, he had intention just to eat the berries, it still would have been forbidden to have a psik reshe v'lomus, because in his case, it's an inevitable result that he is making a vessel that he actually needs. We turn back to the Gemara. Tonu Rabbanon. We have illustration 528 in the Pirush Chai, which you'll find on page 106. We see the lulav bound together with the hadasim and arovs. We're looking at the bottom, at the base of it. See, that's why you don't see any leaves in the picture, but it's here to emphasize what the binding looks like in the context of this source. The source says, Hutur Ogdoi Biyontov. Let's say the binding that you prepared, Erev Yontov, it became loose, it fell apart on Yontov. Ogdo ke aguda shel yerek, and that's what you see in the illustration in 528, the way vegetables are bound together, that type of binding. And it should be pointed out, there is no knotting, you're not making a knot, and therefore it's allowed on Yontov. The Gemara asks Vamai, why is that the way you're binding it together? Li'anvei mi'anev, do what you see in 529. You might call that making a bow. The Gemara answers, Ha'moni Rabbi Yehuda hi, the source that we just read is in accordance with the Tana Rabbi Yehuda, the Amar Aniva Kshira Ma'al Yasahi. Making the bow, which is something that many of us are familiar with within the context of tying one's shoes. One makes a bow. According to Rabbi Yehuda, that is a full-fledged kshira, a full-fledged knot, and one of the ovos malachis, one of the prohibited activities on Shabbos and Yom Tov is making knots. So this source is not suggesting aniva, but rather aguda shel yerek, because this is in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda, and we're talking about what you are going to do on Yom Tov. Therefore, aniva cannot be suggested. Question: I Rabbi Yehuda eged ma'al yisavoy? According to Rabbi Yehuda, the aguda shel yerek isn't sufficient. You need to have a full fledged binding, which involves making a real knot. And that's not what you see in the Aguda Shel Yerek in illustration 528. So how can you say that this source is in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda when it doesn't seem to reflect his opinion? The Gemara answers, Hai Tana, Sovar Lo Kavasei Bechado, Upolig Olei Bechado. This Tana holds like him that Aniva is a full-fledged knot. However, he disagrees with him in that you don't need to have an eged ma'al yisah. And therefore the aguda shel yerek is enough. Regarding the last point, we said upolo galei b'chado, Rashi points out that this Tana is of the opinion that lulav ein tzarech eged. The lulav doesn't have to be formally bound. The whole allusion to binding in the first place is mashma from Rashi that it's because of what we had said earlier, that there's a mitzvah to have it bound together because of zeh keli v'anveu. But in the event that it comes apart, you certainly don't tie it together on yontov. That would be an av malacha. All that is left for you to do is wrap it together like the aguda shel yerek to keep them together. But all of that is not because of any need for an eged. This source holds like the Rabbonon that lulav lo tzarech eged. The Mishnah. And with this Mishnah, we start the Dinei Arova. And that's what we have as our topic heading. Arova, gezula, a stolen arova with the avesha, dried out, psula. Shalashera, mishal irani dachas, psula. if it's a worshipped Arava, or it's an Arava found in an idolatrous city, it's unfit. Niktam Rosha, illustration 535, shows you that. Nifritzu Alel, illustration 536, shows you that. Vatzaf Tzifa, this is a different variety of plant that you see illustrated in 539, that is Psula. Kmusha Vishinoshru Mitzas Alel, if it's Kmusha, Rashi in the past gave us a French word for that, as opposed to dry, maybe the term withered is appropriate, it's kosher. And likewise, if some of the leaves fell off, it's kosher. Vishel Baal. Baal is a field watered by rain, a rain-watered field. It's kshera. It's acceptable. The Rashi points out, Baal karkashen etzricha lahashkois. It's a field that does not need to be irrigated. The sagile b'motar shemayim b'metar shemayim. It's enough that the rain is enough to sustain the field. That's what a baal is referring to. The Gemara. Now, the Gemara begins with a couple of Tanaic sources, and as far as the markings are concerned, we use the diamond, as you'll see, we use it to highlight the posuk that mentions Arve Nachal. Tona Rabbanan, Arve Nachal, Hagdelim al Hanachal. It's a reference to the willows that grow by the river. In Gemara markings, we generally try to resist translating things, especially plants and the like, but the Arve Nachal is a reference to Aravos that grow by a river. Dover Acher, Arve Nachal. It means she'ole shelo, its leaf moshuch kenachal, is long, it's elongated, just like a river is a long body of water. And by saying long, Rashi points out, and not roundish, and we thereby, to the exclusion of the tzaftzifa, that would not qualify for the arava. Tanyo Idoch, another source, also darshaning Arve Nachal. Arve Nachal, Ein Li Elo Arve Nachal. If I were to stick to the Torah words, I would think that only an Arova that grows by a river would be acceptable. Shel Baal v'shel Hora Minayin. Arovas that grow in fields watered by rain, or Arovas that grow on mountains, from where do I know that they are acceptable? Talmud Lomar, Arve Nachal Mikomakom. The word Arve is in the plural form. So we're including all Arova situations. Not only those that grow by the river, but those that grow on mountains and grow in rain-watered fields as well. We continue at the top of Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph. Abashol Omer. Abashol also darshins this pasuk. Arve equals shtayim. The arve is a word in the plural. Minimum plural is two. So the Torah is alluding to two arovos. Achas lulav, one for the mitzvah of lulav, the achas lemikdash, and the other for the mitzvah of the arova in the Beis HaMikdash, and that is discussed later in this masichta. It involves their taking aravas, long arava stalks, and surrounding the mizbeach with them. V'rabbanan, as far as the Tanakama, the mikdash minaluhu, where do they know about the arava for the Beis HaMikdash? The Gemara answers, hichasa gemiri luhu. They have that there was this arava mitzvah in the Beis HaMikdash, as an oral tradition. The Omer of Asi, Omer of Yochanan. Here we have three unrelated halachas, but there are three that were taught together as an oral tradition. And we're not going to focus on the other two, but they are Eser Netios, Arova v'nisuch hamayim halocha l'moshe misinai. Esther Netios, without getting into any detail, Rashi does get into detail, but that has to do with laws regarding plowing fields before the onset of a Shemitah year. If you have 10 saplings in the area of a base se'ah, you're allowed to plow the field right up to Shemitah. Arova is what's relevant to us, and that's why we dashed underline it. Nisuch HaMayim is a reference to the water libations practiced on the holiday of Sukkot, where in addition to wine, water was poured on the Mizbeach during the offering of the Tomid Shel Shachar. This we know, according to Rabbi Yochanan, we know through an oral tradition. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.